Chapter 18. Dazed and Confused. As 2020 neared a close, the mask profiteering stories had pulled me west, southwest, south, and east on various reporting trips, some more successful than others. The chaos was winding down in the PPE space, though nitrile gloves had taken the place of the N95 mask for their extreme markups, rampant overuse, and reliance on Chinese factories. I was exploring new reporting lanes, stuff about nursing homes and blood banks. Then, a deus ex machina, like a floating piece of rubbish in a violent sea, reopened the hunt for the mysterious Juanita Ramos. I received an email from a reader in Kansas, a biologist, who had come across my reporting and realized she'd been on a call with Juanita Ramos in the spring of 2020 as her firm sought masks for healthcare workers in the Sunflower State. She provided a few emails, and one included a Seattle phone number for our mystery lady. I thanked her profusely. I cross-referenced the number with the name. It didn't lead me to a stripper in Atlanta, unfortunately. Now, I'm no fan of the ecdysiast arts. It feels exploitative, and we Colorado boys are quick to blush. I am, however, a big fan of any story about a stripper with connections to the White House. Alas, no such luck. But I did come upon a black and white photo of a woman dressed in a tribal-patterned woven sweater, a stone necklace draping from her neck, and stark white hair that shaded dark toward frizzled ends. She was holding a taxidermied eagle wing, which a blurb in a local magazine described as being bestowed upon her by elders of the Cherokee Nation, a symbol of the tribe's acceptance of her as a practitioner of Native American medicine. She was a goddamn medicine woman. My friend back home was right all along. Damn you, Krizno. She had spent years ambling about the American West, guiding two-leggeds through spiritual detoxes, as the article described it, preaching the value of earth medicine. Earth medicine naturally intersected with her interests in marijuana and its legalization and sale. I'd scoured LinkedIn, looked through lobbyist registrations and searched political campaign contributions and more. But my bored friend had just gone down a late-night search engine frenzy months earlier and came upon this post and tried to inform me. I'm pretty good with Google, which I admit is not impressive, but I nonetheless couldn't figure out how his search terms led him to this obscure posting. Maybe he used Ask Jeeves? The guy is kind of old. Thoroughly embarrassed, I called the number. She answered, and I told her I'm a reporter and that I'd been looking for her. I have a story to share with you, Juanita, I told her. Okay. I wish I had found you earlier. Your name is pretty common. And I was looking in sort of D.C. circles. D.C. circles? She asked. Yeah, I'm in D.C. Anyway, so I am in D.C. here. I was working on a story about a contractor who got a deal with the VA for 6 million masks. And, okay, this contractor was fairly new. It was clear to me that they didn't have experience getting masks. I reached out, and he says, you know, we're going to close this deal in a day or two. Why don't you tag along? So I tagged along, and it was pretty clear the deal was falling through. She sighed, knowingly. So the CEO I'm hanging out with, I rambled on. He keeps saying he's got somebody named Juanita Ramos who has connections with the Mike Pence White House. Mike Pence, she said. Yeah. Oh, shit, she said with a laugh. I wish. Wait, no, actually, I don't wish. I take that back. I don't wish. The White House? Yeah. Wow, that's really a trip. It was becoming clear she knew as much about the White House Coronavirus Task Force as they knew of her. That is to say, not at all. Dude, I'm in the marijuana industry, okay? The 66-year-old woman explained. I've helped write legislation. I help people with, you know, that kind of stuff. Industrial hemp. I mean, I'm down for the farmer. And believe me, Mike Pence ain't gonna do shit for the marijuana industry or the farmer. She was referring to her work with the Utah Association for Responsible Cannabis Legislation and Sacred Roots Healing. The group's work to convince skeptics that non-THC cannabis products don't make children with autism, like, super high. She'd also worked for a major CBD company in Colorado, the first state to legalize recreational pot, a movement I covered as a Cub reporter. "I think you're right," I said. "I don't think Mike Pence is interested in that." I emailed her what I'd already written and asked her to read what Stewart had told me, his colleagues, and the federal government. She pulled up the story and read along as I stayed on the line. After a long pause, she spoke again. "I'm reading this and I'm going, holy hell," she said. "Like what? Middlemen? Brokers? I never claimed to have a contact within the White House Coronavirus Task Force. First off, I don't even like Mike Pence. I shouldn't say I don't like him because I don't know the man. I don't know the man. I don't know any of those guys, so I don't know how I became the mystery woman, but this was a great ha-ha." But she said the story did jog her memory of a call she had. And it did involve Stewart, whose name she had forgotten until reading the story. She'd been on a phone call with Stewart and Troy King, who she erroneously thought was the Attorney General of Arkansas, not Alabama. But she said she was only tangentially involved in the conversation. Some money guys in Boston had set it up. It came up because of her connections in the marijuana business. I asked if she'd be comfortable meeting. Seattle had calmed down from those terrifying months when the first large-scale outbreak tore through the city. I had my N95, and I could quarantine on either side of the jag, I explained. She'd love to have me over for a visit, she said, and to potentially share some earth medicine. But she wasn't in Seattle anymore. She had just moved in with her daughter in, of all places, Texas. This time, Austin. The universe has jokes. From her sunlit living room in a cookie-cutter subdivision in South Austin, Ramos, shoeless and comfortable in draping white linen, told the story of how she became a tangential player in a mess that would become the subject of investigations by the VA Inspector General, the FBI, and Congress. In late April, amid the most stringent lockdowns, and just as states and the federal government were throwing money all over the place in search of PPE, Ramos got a call from a friend in the marijuana business. This friend had launched a family business selling and marketing hemp products, which are made from the cannabis plant but won't get you high like recreational or medicinal marijuana. It's harmless, abundant, and useful. So the two proponents of earth medicine had come to know each other and would correspond, typically discussing marketing strategy, legalization, and each other's families. But this time, the friend had reached out about a potentially huge payday. He had gotten wind that a group of guys were buzzing over a $34.5 million purchase order from the VA and a smaller FEMA contract worth about $3.5 million awarded to federal government experts. This group of guys was prospecting far and wide in search of masks with hopes of taking a cut of the payoff from the master contractor, Robert Stewart. Once the masks were delivered, none had any previous experience in sourcing this sort of medical garb, but like all of us, they were grounded at home and had decided to work their networks for a potential gold mine. What's there to lose? It makes some sense that the VA and FEMA purchase orders made their way into the marijuana industry, where deals are often made quickly and in cash due to the tenuous legal nature of the enterprise and the complications it presents with traditional banking and investment. Marijuana retailers, in limbo between state legalization and conflicting federal law, often get financing outside of traditional banks from private equity firms and wealthy individuals. A famous example of the unsavory networks this burgeoning business creates was widely reported not long before the pandemic, in the before time, when two indicted Soviet-born businessmen working for President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, tried to finance a pot business with cash from a Russian investor. This happened around the same time Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman conspired to violate campaign finance law, along with other colorful buffoonery. It was in this context that the friend asked Ramos, did she want in on the mask action? Through her work and advocacy, Ramos had modest connections in the medical supply chain. She'd helped the Navajo tribe get hold of a few thousand masks, for instance. She figured she'd take a crack at the assignment because perhaps that network could be of some use to terrified healthcare workers and U.S. military veterans. A little extra cash wouldn't hurt either. Ramos enlisted her 50-year-old daughter, Dawn, and both hit the phones, calling moneyed folks they had encountered in the weed racket. I told my daughter, hey, if we were to look at doing this, we would do like maybe a penny or 2 cents, Ramos said, referring to the potential commission on each mask. If they were successful at connecting Stewart and his new coterie of brokers on the VA deal alone, at 2 cents, that would mean just $120,000 for maybe a week's work. Quite a payday, sure, but chump change to experienced government contractors and subcontractors. In the marijuana space, Ramos thought, there were people with deep pockets who could move money around fast, avoiding the hang-ups that might slow such an urgent purchase. It's quick money, she told me. And the broker game in the marijuana and industrial hemp industry, it's exactly the same. What happened next was hauntingly stupid. The elderly woman living with her daughter in a subdivision in South Austin found herself linked to a barrage of emails from people who claimed to possess obscene amounts of masks for sale to the highest bidder. Or if not that, they had a wealthy buyer in search of an obscene amount of masks. It depended on the day. She saved her emails, ranging from the early days of the pandemic and well into its first summer. They provided the clearest documentation of the hidden greed and ludicrous behavior that the federal government and other buyers had spawned. The VA and FEMA deals had come to her and the friend via a real estate investor in New England who was freelancing for a firm by the name of Boston Capital Consultants. This is not to be confused with Boston Capital, the massive real estate development company founded in the 1970s. No, this was a much smaller operation founded by Boston entrepreneur Aaron Marcy Sells. He founded Boston Capital Consultants in 2018 after doing years of marketing work for New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft, along with some real estate investing through firms branded with his initials. A serial entrepreneur, he'd also launched bars and liquor brands, and most recently, a holding company for cannabis ventures, which he dubbed AmScan Inc. It stood ostensibly for Aaron Marcy Sells Cannabis. It's a good name and a good use of a name. They're all big marijuana guys, Ramos explained. Ramos said alarming conversations with Boston Capital Consultants eventually led her to sever ties, and soon after wipe her hands clean of the entire PPE effort. They were telling me that they put like $1.25 on top of a mask, Ramos alleged. That markup alone was about the retail cost of N95 masks before the pandemic. And I'm like, what are you talking about? People are dying, and you guys are ripping people off for $1.25? It's like broker, 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 broker for like 15 people in the middle, right? And then that dollar mask turns into $8 or $7 or whatever. I don't want to get caught up in ripping people off, she added. That's blood money to me. Emails show that various representatives of Boston Capital Consultants were aggressively marketing PPE to a growing list of private buyers, including international investors linked, allegedly, back to the United Kingdom, Switzerland, and Australia. And then there was Ramos, somehow in the mix, and Stewart, who thought she was working in the White House. Deal of the day, 5.87 million KN95 masks, FDA. 95 cents per mask on the ground in L.A., PO/POF gets POL. One email from Boston Capital Consultants read, illustrating the parlance of the PPE trade. A PO meant purchase order. POF is proof of funds, and POL is the proof of life. These will move fast, so please do so as well, the email ends. Ramos shared emails that included several letters of intent, commonly referred to as LOIs, which illustrated how secret investors were trying to profit off Stewart's ill-fated VA deal. In these pitch documents, prospective buyers outline how much they'll pay for masks that are either sitting in a warehouse or dropping off a manufacturer's production line. In late April, as Stewart was working to fulfill contracts with both the VA and FEMA, Ramos received an LOI showing that a Zurich-based investor who runs a dietary supplement company hoped to buy 100 million N95 respirators a week from 3M. He offered to pay $3.71 each and explicitly stated he would resell them to FEMA and other agencies. The document was fascinating in that it detailed an investor buying in for masks destined for FEMA, which had awarded Stewart a contract paying out about $7 per mask. That's a markup of roughly $3.29 per mask, or nearly 89%, to be split among the investor and brokers. There were some obvious eye-roll-worthy problems with this proposal, however. First, masks are light and small, but they're not weightless and minute. A shipment of 100 million masks would take up an enormous amount of space, and the weight would require a sophisticated freight and distribution process. Not to mention that 3M's deal with the entire U.S. government called for the delivery of just 35 million masks per month. In a press release in May 2020, the company had said it doubled its N95 production to reach about 1.1 billion masks a year, or about 92 million masks a month for both the government and the private sector. The LOI was, on its face, impossible. Yet it was obvious those sharing these records either believed in the deal or believed they could get someone else to believe enough to wire money. Still, figures included in that LOI illustrated how inexperienced investors sought to feast on the fat between the cost of an actual mask and the prices arbitrarily set by the federal government's publicly disclosed contract amounts. Imagine a rich guy coming into an auto dealership and saying, "Yes, hello, I'd like to buy this Corvette for $120,000. Would it behoove the salesman to divulge that the manufacturer's suggested retail price is about $60,000? This is not a rational way to do business, yet taxpayers were, by proxy, an idiot rich guy at a dealership. In this way, the federal government was inadvertently fueling the mask bonanza at the same time it sought salvation through the free market. America was screwing itself over, and the brokers were playing their part. At the very least, these absurd offers were obscuring and perhaps amplifying the market price of a mask. These were the buccaneers to which Stewart was referring on our journey to Chicago. When I reached out to the Boston marijuana guys about their foray into the mask business, Marcy Sells provided possibly the best quote I've pulled out of a subject. If you asked me under oath what happened, I couldn't tell you. Sells lobbied hard for me not to include his name in any reporting on the PPE trade. "I am not involved in this Ramos and Troy King nightmare," he said. I asked him multiple times if Boston Capital Consultants was as involved in the PPE game as emails sent out by his employees clearly showed. He dodged the questions. "We do a lot of different business," he said. Massachusetts business filings show that on July 14, 2020, Sells founded a new venture, Safe and Clean Protection, LLC. Its stated business purpose is to manufacture and sell personal protective equipment, PPE. So, cleared that up. Ramos also shared several transaction records that turned out to be forgeries, all apparently provided by anonymous investors. Over time, Ramos said she would just roll her eyes and send the emails to the trash folder. But I asked to see them. One exchange perfectly illustrated the magical thinking that pervaded the PPE trade. Remember, most of the country was stuck at home, and international travel was not an option. In the late spring, a potentially existent English investor, using an obscure international charity, was working with a London-based consulting firm to establish that he was a reasonable distributor for 3M products. In his proposal, he included a letter with HSBC Bank letterhead that stated he had more than $2 billion in available funds. This letter of assurance from a bank constituted a proof of funds, or POF, if, in fact, it was real. The package also came with a letter of support from a California-based energy company that he claimed was vouching for his business as a client. The proposal floated between Boston Capital Consultants, including its owner, and a guy named Joseph Ingara of Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. In his email signature, Ingara identifies himself as head rainmaker for Apex Growth Solutions, LLC. The company appears to do some sort of marketing and claims to use cutting-edge technology with strategies based on the world's leading science of how people make choices. Its website is one static page with a 12-second video with no words or narration, but with an illustration that shows a red liquid being poured from a laboratory beaker into an Excel data filter funnel icon. The images then transform into a cell phone with a bar graph on the screen. The cell phone somehow shoots an arrow at a target. Bullseye. The video ends with a jingle. In other words, I have no idea what the hell this company does. I'm aware of a huge fucking lot, 1 to 2B range in the UK, Ingara wrote to the Boston guys in early May, referring to a large mask transaction. Get this shipped in one big shot and get paid quickly, he wrote in bold letters. This proposed deal and accompanying documents were curious. First, they came via a company in Palm Beach County, Florida, which is home to a host of colorful venture capitalists and cons. Second, the Delaware address the billionaire investor listed as his U.S. office connected to a residential home valued below $200,000. Third, around this time in the pandemic's first spring, brokers say it's improbable, if not impossible, that such a large stock of masks ever existed. They just weren't being manufactured and stored in great surpluses beyond pre-pandemic demand. Then there's the letter vouching for the buyer on letterhead from UDECM, a California firm that designs and builds solar energy rigs for governments and hospitals, primarily overseas. I would later send the letter to the firm's owner, who said it was a forgery, like dozens of others that he'd batted away in recent months. The letter is 100% fake, he said. Why pick his firm? He didn't know, but they had been involved in some small PPE deals early in the pandemic. He said his firm was leveraging its international supply chain connections to help some nonprofits find masks. But after UDECM dipped its toes into the sea of brokers, it went viral, he said. Everybody's got documents out there being forged now, he said. Ingara, the Florida rainmaker, said he didn't know the document he shared wasn't real. I have zero idea of who drafted that letter, he said in an email. I hope they catch the scumbag. It was this smoke and mirrors clusterfuck that brought Ramos and I together, sitting on a large brown leather sectional in an unremarkable house inside a master-planned maze of sneeze-inducing cedar trees and stone facades southwest of downtown Austin, whose bustling weirdness of music and art and free-flowing booze had given way to silence. Ramos loved the new neighborhood, where residents enjoy a golf course, meandering bike trails, and an Olympic-sized pool that is, inexplicably, heated. It was a good, quiet, and peaceful life. Ramos was far from the shrewd, White House-connected capitalist I had been led to expect. Between expressions of disgust at the mask market into which she had delved and soon escaped, She described her higher being as creator. In the bathrooms and kitchen, she had placed colorful stones in the sinks, so when the two-leggeds washed their hands, bad energy would wash off and return to the earth. In the end, after all this, Ramos said she and her daughter only pocketed about $200. She had no idea how much the other cast of characters may have profited. As I took notes on everything she explained, I felt like one of the less fortunate characters in a Coen Brothers movie. Like, what the fuck did we learn here? That maybe we shouldn't trust the safety of American healthcare workers to weed dealers? This seemed self-evident, but I guess I had the goods to prove it. The emails and stories she shared that day were artifacts of what political leaders should expect when they throw chum into shark-infested waters with no greater strategy. Madness. So what, I asked Ramos, what is the point of all this? In thought, she scratched the ears of her two aging white fluffy dogs, Sherlock and Inspector Clouseau, whose longevity she credited to CBD oil. History was about to repeat itself, she finally said. She worried that hospitals, schools, and governments would waste their time and money with middlemen and profiteers as the virus returned in the coming waves. It's coming, Ramos said. It's going to be repeated. As the interview that took us from D.C. to Boston to Kentucky to Texas to Alabama and to Europe wound down, we devolved into pleasant small talk of a maternal nature. This shit happens to me all the time. She expressed concern that I had not yet been married. My aura was good, she said, and I'd benefit from such a union. I asked her about her husband, and she said they were divorced. I told her I couldn't think of any more lines of questioning, though I'd follow up. The complete lack of tourists to Austin's once buzzing Congress Avenue had afforded me a great deal in a luxury hotel I had eyed for years. It beckoned. But I shouldn't leave just yet, she said. You should stay, she said cheerfully. Smoke a little. I declined, but nonetheless left, dazed and confused.